We will hear argument in number 21-1784, Robinson against McDonough. Mr. Knuckles, please begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the court. This morning I'd like to address two errors that the Veterans Court made below. The first was to assess under an erroneously restricted standard whether the law of the case doctrine applies. The second was to treat whether an agency-issued document constitutes a quote-unquote decision as presenting a question of fact when it presents a question of law. And so the issue I'd like to address first is law of the case, which...
Mr. Knuckles, can I interrupt and ask you about something that I remain quite puzzled by? I think I understand what the consequence is of your prevailing on your August 1979 argument, or at least what you say the consequence is, which is that there's a still pending claim sitting there that has never been ruled on. And that would, in your view, push any date, at least potentially, back to that. I do not understand what the consequence is. You win on the proposition that the September 1997 board decision saying something about the July 1975 decision being the last final decision. I need the connection made for how that benefits you.
Yes, Your Honor. And so the question is whether the last final decision occurred in 1975 or 1980. And it's that 1980 that's a problem because it's after 1979. And so these two issues are related in that respect, where if the 1997 board decision has resolved that the most recent prior final decision had occurred in July 1975, then that does open the door for 1979 earliest effective date. Where if the 1979 proceedings had become final in 1980, Mr. Robinson would have a problem for seeking an earlier effective date than he currently has. And so,
as I understand it, you need actually to prevail on the law of the case point in order for you to prevail on the 1979 point.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
And so law of the case is a doctrine that, as this appeal illustrates, is significant to many of our country's military veterans. Their VA claims, as here, can span decades. And with VA staff cycling out, cycling in, you often end up with the result being that the benchmarks without this and the goalposts without this law of the case anchor being pushed back. And so here what Mr. Robinson is requesting is that the court correct the Veterans Court's error as to whether under the law of the case doctrine that 1997 board decision did settle that the most recent prior final decision that he received from VA on this claim occurred in July of 1975. And on the correct standard for invoking the law of the case doctrine, it involves whether the matter has been actually decided. And that casts a pretty wide net because it encompasses both a matter being either expressly decided or decided by necessary implication. And so the Veterans Court's error here was to essentially lop off that by necessary implication. It held that the law, to get the benefit of the law, the case doctrine, Mr. Robinson had to show that the 1997 board decision had specifically or expressly decided an issue. And that makes a difference. For reasons including that the board in 1997 had to address when the most recent prior final decision had been issued. The basis of its jurisdiction depended on that answer, and so did the scope of its duty to consider whether any of the evidence that had been added to Mr. Robinson's administrative record since the prior final decision was material. And here I'll mention that at appendix page 64, the board concluded that the July 1975 rating decision was, quote unquote, the last final rating decision denying service connection for a psychiatric disorder. And so as a result, it's Mr. Robinson's contention that the Veterans Court could, under the correct actually decided standard, conclude that the 1997 board decision did actually decide that Mr. Robinson's July 1975 rating decision was his most recent prior final decision.
Mr. Niles, the government argues that the Veterans Court in 2000 did not decide whether that factual finding by the board about 1975 did not decide it even by implication whether it was correct. They didn't even address it because it was remanding on materiality. And so what is your argument for how that issue could have been decided by implication by the Veterans Court?
Yes, Your Honor, and there's Mr. Robinson has presented both the 1997 board decision as establishing the law of the case, and he asked that this court consider what he has also asserted as the 2000 Veterans Court decision establishing law of the case as being in the alternative to that. In 2000 and today, the Veterans Court has no jurisdiction to disturb a favorable board determination. And so here, this determination...
You're not answering my question. You're just relying on the board decision. Is that what I'm hearing correctly? I want to know where you think the Veterans Court, or you're agreeing with me, I guess, that the Veterans Court could not have, by implication even, addressed the date in the 1999 board decision, correct?
The Veterans Court could have addressed it, but could not have done anything to disturb it, Your Honor. And there is...
But did they address it? Because your argument, I think, is that the Veterans Court erred by saying that they had just specifically expressly addressed the issue, and you want to say, well, the case is broader than that. It includes making a decision by implication. But I don't see where they made the decision by implication. I need your help to see that, if you want me to rule on that basis.
And so the Veterans... Yes, Your Honor, and thank you for that. The Veterans Court did... in its 2000 decision, and I beg the court's patience for a moment as I pull up the Veterans Court decision from 2000, which starts at appendix page 59. It does not directly say that the 1997 board decision decided this matter, but it does go through the analysis of the 1997 board decision, which did. And so Mr. Robinson is reading the Veterans Court decision.
I don't see that. Show me where it is to rely on it. So just pages A59.
All right, so appendix at page 60.
Okay.
And so there's the first full paragraph on that page begins, to reopen a finally disallowed claim. And there, the Veterans Court goes into and sort of repeats the 1997 board decision's analysis that stepped through these more than a dozen different pieces of evidence that had been added to the record, the administrative record, since July 1975, including this letter from a psychiatrist, Dr. Kenneth Seaman, dated April 1980. And then in that letter going on to express, and so it's in that vein that the Veterans Court is referring to the September 1997 board decision, and even saying in the concluding sentence of that letter that in its September 1997 decision, the board determined that that letter was not material. And so it's that analysis beginning with 1975 and going forward that by implication does decide the issue. The year 2000 Veterans Court decision, as well as 1997 board decision doing so. Although to repeat, the 2000 Veterans Court decision could not have disturbed that.
Mr. Niles, I don't understand what difference it makes on the legal standard based upon your argument about what the board decision says. You're not arguing, I don't think, that the board decision implicitly decided anything. You're arguing that it explicitly decided that 1975 was the last decision on the merits. So what are we looking at in terms of, are you just trying to get a legal hook to say we have jurisdiction here? Because it seems to me that even under the standard you're proffering, it makes no difference as to how we look at the 97 document.
Ultimately, Your Honor, that is Mr. Robinson's decision, the 1997 board decision, decided that July 1975 was the most recent prior final denial. But the reason we're drawing this and maybe Angel's Dance on the Head of a Pin Joke.
Isn't that really your problem, though? Because what you're asking us to look at is factually what the 1997 document decided, and we can't do that. And in fact, you know, the board and the Veterans Court later came along and said the 1997 decision didn't decide this at all. And if you look at the 97 decision, it may say that the 75 decision was the last decision on the merit, but it also specifically references a claim to reopen and a final decision on that. And that's what the board has used and the Veterans Court has used in your case as the final decision in 1980. Isn't that correct?
Your Honor, it is precisely out of that concern that we have been doing the stance of requesting only that this court reverse the erroneous legal standard that the
Let me ask you this. If the board and the Veterans Court are correct that that 97 document factually references a claim to reopen in 1979 and a final decision refusing to reopen because there was no material new evidence, doesn't that 1980 decision become the final decision in this case and prevent any earlier effective date than you have?
If that is all that the Veterans Court were, the extent of the analysis that the Veterans Court were charged to perform, then yes. But it is not, because the Veterans Court also had to look at, hey, was there a decision by necessary implication here? And what Mr. Robinson...
I don't understand any of that. Let's just assume, I know you probably disagree with this factual description of the 97 board decision, but let's just assume it recognizes that there was a 1979 claim to reopen and a 1980 decision declining to reopen because there's no material evidence or insufficient grounds. Factually, that's correct. Where does that leave you with regard to your asserted legal error in the Veterans Court's decision? What difference would it make?
And there we would need to move to whether that September 1979 document that Mr. Robinson received constitutes a decision. And
you're pivoting and not answering my question on the first issue about why law of the case matters here.
I apologize. I may be misunderstanding your question. And I would.
My question is, if the 97 decision is read as recognizing a claim to reopen in 1979 and a denial of that claim to reopen in 1980, which is what the Veterans Court and the board found here, then what difference does it make your argument about legal error in the court's application of law in the case? Because there's a factual finding that nobody can disturb, or at least we can't disturb, that there's a 1980 claim denial, which would be the final claim denial.
I very much appreciate the follow-up, Your Honor. I think I finally understand Your Honor's question. If there is a finding, determination that July 1975 was the final, the most recent final rating decision here, then it does not matter for purposes of earlier effective date, establishing its earlier effective date, whether there was also a decision in 1979 or 1980. The most recent prior final decision had been in 1975. And so
you're still not accepting my hypothetical. The 1980 decision denying a claim to reopen is the most recent final decision denying a claim to reopen. Doesn't that cut off any argument to go beyond what the court already gave you and the board? If that's true, if that 1980 decision is a denial of a claim to reopen, then the characterization as a 75 claim as a final decision on the merits is not inconsistent with a denial of a claim to reopen, which is, as you know, not a claim on the a decision on the merits, but a denial of a claim to reopen. They're entirely consistent with each other, and that's what the board and the Veterans Court later found in this case.
And I am pushing back, Your Honor, because if the 1975 decision never did become final, and so maybe I need to stop here and pushing back and say, under this premise where April 1980 is the most recent final decision, period, end of sentence, then yes, Mr. Robinson then has a problem going back earlier than 1992. And so that is why we are pushing back on whether if the Veterans Court applied the correct legal standard here in assessing the law of the case, because we believe that if it did not, it has at least a reasonable possibility. And so there is a reason to remand for the Veterans Court to in the first instance. So this court is not in the first instance.
I don't understand why it is a question of implicitly or explicitly. You're arguing about what the decision explicitly says. And the decision explicitly says that the 1975 decision was the final decision on the merits. But it also explicitly says that a claim to reopen was denied in 1980. So again, I don't understand what any purported legal error in the Veterans Court's decision means for your case as applied. You're arguing about the facts of what the 97 decision says, which we can't review.
And I apologize for possibly muddying this. What we are arguing and trying to argue here is that the 1975 decision, let's adopt the premise that it did not expressly decide 1975 was the most recent prior final decision. It still had to, by necessary implication, address this because the basis of its jurisdiction, whether it's 3156A or B, depended on that. And so did the scope of its obligation to consider whether any evidence that had been added was new. And I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Thank you, Mr. Niles. We will restore your rebuttal time and hear from Ms. Akers now.
Thank you, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'll start with the law of the case issue. Mr. Robinson's argument should be rejected for two reasons. First, there was no violation of the law of the case, and second, the law of the case was never established. To our first argument, even if the law of the case were established, like Mr. Robinson argues, the Veterans Court correctly determined that the Board did not violate the law of the case. So even if it's the law of the case that the 1975 decision was the last final decision on the merits, the issue addressed in this appeal is not contrary to that finding. As Judge Hughes acknowledged, there's no inconsistency between what Mr. Robinson characterizes as the last final decision and what the Board did here. The question in this appeal is whether Mr. Robinson's two requests to reopen were finally decided, and the Court concluded that they were in that 1988 decision. And there's no inconsistency with that and the premise that the 1975 decision was the last final decision on the merits. Second, even putting aside that the law of the case was never violated, the law of the case also was never established. And we explained in our brief that's the case for at least two reasons. First, to create the law of the case, the issue must have been actually decided. And as we heard here today, Mr. Robinson doesn't seem to argue that the issue was expressly decided in the 2000 Veterans Court decision. He argues it was decided by implication, but he has not and cannot explain here today how the issue was decided by implication. And I would point your honors to our brief on page 12, the Smith intern case that explains when a decision is necessarily decided or decided by implication. Mr. Robinson simply doesn't meet that here. And then finally, for the law of the case to be created, there must be a final decision. As we've cited in our brief, the Supreme Court in the Smelting case has provided that there must be a final decision. A remand order is not a final decision, and therefore the Veterans Court decision can't create the law of the case. And I'll briefly turn to the second issue on waiver. The court should not entertain Mr. Robinson's argument that the
Veterans Court applied. Ms. Akers, you were just talking, I think, but correct me if I'm wrong, about the 2000 Veterans Court opinion as a basis for law of the case. I understood Mr. Niles to be relying in the alternative for on the September 1997 board decision as establishing law of the case. Maybe you already have addressed that, in which case, readdress it, please, because I missed it. In any event, please address that.
Sure, Your Honor. I understand Mr. Robinson's argument to be perhaps establishing or arguing that both the 1997 and the 2000 decision created the law of the case. The 1997 decision didn't create the law of the case because, as the Veterans Court explained in the 2000 decision, it was ambiguous at best. The board, one, said that the 1975 decision was the final decision on the merits, but it also acknowledged, as Judge Hughes acknowledged during his questioning, that there was a 1980 decision denying the request to reopen. And so there was reference to both of the decisions. So to the extent that Mr. Robinson tries to characterize one as the final attempt or the, or excuse me, the final decision. It's ambiguous as to which one was the final decision. The 1980 reference was obviously later than the 1975, but either way, there's reference to both of those decisions in the board decision in 1997. We'll turn briefly to the second issue, which is the waiver issue, and our argument here is that the court shouldn't even entertain Mr. Robinson's argument that the Veterans Court applied the incorrect standard of review. As this court explained in the Logan case that's cited on page 16 of our brief, a party cannot urge a court to apply a particular standard of review, and then, once the court does apply that standard of review, turn around and argue that the court improperly applied the standard of review, and that's exactly what Mr. Robinson has attempted to do here.
Can we, just setting aside the waiver argument, what do you think is the proper standard of review for the Veterans Court in determining whether something's a decision by the RO or not?
We believe, Your Honor, that Mr. Robinson's, the case law that he cited in his brief, that the determination as to whether a certain document constitutes a decision has typically been reviewed under a de novo standard. And that's why we requested in the alternative, if the court doesn't believe that waiver was established here, we would ask that the court remand to the Veterans Court to apply the de novo standard of review. We don't think the court needs to get there.
Why do you think looking at a document, determining whether that is a decision of the RO capable of being appealed to the board is an actual decision? Or is it, am I getting it mixed up? It's not, is it, we're talking about two different things when we're talking about standard review. It's not necessarily, it's a purely factual decision, but that it's at least an application of law to fact that the Veterans Court would review de novo.
Exactly.
So there, okay. And do you have, I would think that there was something out here that I was having a hard time finding something. I know that there's statutory requirements for what's a final board decision, but do you know if there's any legal test for what's a final RO decision in case law or anything?
Your Honor, I'm not aware of any. Case law that specifically identifies criteria or a test to make that determination.
That seems a little odd, Your Honor. We're 30 years into the system and we don't have a standard for determining what a final decision of the RO is. I know that your view probably here is there's nothing in this at all that signifies an intent from the RO to rule on the merits of his claim. And the text of it seems very, short and suggests that all they're saying is you filed the wrong application, file something else. But it's a little confusing to me that we don't have at least some case law on what constitutes a final decision from a regional office.
I think, Your Honor, that perhaps the reason we don't have a test or specific criteria is that it's a very factual determination. A lot of these cases have a very elongated posture, and there are, like in this case, several back-and-forth letters and documents between the VA and the veteran. And so the posture of the proceedings is quite confusing and certainly never the same between case to case. And so there's a lot of context that might help establish whether a document constitutes a final decision or notice of disagreement or anything like that. And the I think a good example is page appendix 23, where the board was explaining why these certain letters didn't constitute notices of disagreement. And it explains that the context is important and the board had to look at whether there was an evinced understanding from the parties on a particular issue and whether the document itself, even though it's not in a particular form, bared an indication that there was a rating decision. So I think it's just that there's an informal process, a lot of back and forth between the VA and the veteran, and so it's going to be a really case-by-case specific determination.
Am I remembering right that there was a notification of appeal rights that was part of what was sent in September 1979 and that that at least weighs in the direction of maybe it actually was a decision, but that the content of the document itself weighs in the opposite direction?
That was the issue that was raised below, Your Honor, and that's correct factually. The issue as to whether the appellate rights were attached seemed to be disputed, and there was some briefing on that below that's in the joint appendix. But the issue wasn't really raised on appeal here. And I think...
Not whether appellate rights attach, just like a record question. Is it accepted or clear that notification by the RO was given of appellate rights in that September 1979 communication?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, that's an odd thing to do unless it's a decision, isn't it?
I don't think so, and that's because the posture of this case, and I'll explain why, Your Honor. Beginning in August of 1979, when Mr. Robinson filed what he deemed to be his first claim, even though he later discovered a prior claim was filed, starting at that time, there was a lot of back and forth between the VA and the veteran. The veteran was asserting that he had never filed a claim. The VA came back to him in September and said, you did already file a claim. Here it is, and it gave it to him. They also advised him and tried to help him and said, here are your appellate rights, and if you want to file new and material evidence to try to reopen that claim, you can. Mr. Robinson came back, and there was some confusion. So perhaps in the ordinary course of proceedings, it might be odd, but I think the system was really working here how it should. The VA was trying to help Mr. Robinson, who believed that he had a viable claim, and there was a lot of back and forth. I think the most important part of this case for this court is the 1980 decision that's on Appendix 94, and that decision very clearly denies the two requests to reopen. And because the requests to reopen were denied, and that became final, there was no further action on that in 1980, nothing until 1992, Mr. Robinson's effective date can't be anything earlier than 1992. It's just very clear that the requests to reopen were denied. It became final, and it wasn't until 12 years.
I'm sorry, can you just elaborate on that a little bit? Tell me why it's clear that if the 1980 June denial of reopening was a denial of reopening, that it follows that that Mr. Robinson can't get an effective date before 1992?
Sure, Your Honor. It's because the effective date is the date of the claim, and so here there was these two requests to reopen, right? Mr. Robinson didn't present any new and material evidence, so the requests to reopen were denied in 1980. There was no further follow-up. That denial became final. And so at that point, there was no pending entitlement to any benefit. It wasn't until...
So this is just all about whether there was something still open and pending before the 1992 claim.
That's correct, Your Honor. And
this is just a comment actually to both counsel. We spent hours and hours trying to figure that utterly elementary fact out because nobody said it with simplicity. It would be very helpful if that kind of thing was said with simplicity so we understand the mechanics of why the fight over legal issues matters. Thank you,
Your Honor. And so just to sort of wrap this up, the 1980 decision closed the request to reopen. There wasn't any additional new and material evidence that was submitted by Mr. Robinson until 1992, and therefore that's the earliest effective date that he can get. And he attempts, by using the law of the case, to sort of get around this 1980 decision that closed off his request to reopen. The law of the case, even if it is the law of the case, addresses the 1975 decision. And in this case here, we're talking about the 1980 decision to deny the request to reopen. So the law of the case doesn't get around the 1980 decision or doesn't otherwise keep open any of Mr. Robinson's prior attempts to reopen his case. For those reasons, Your Honor, we ask that the court affirm the Veterans Court decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Niles, did you have... Yes.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just briefly, Mr. Robinson would ask that this court separate its analysis between, on the one hand, did the Veterans Court err? And then number two, was that error prejudicial? And he submits the Veterans Court erred on both the law of the case issue and the scope of review issue. And it erred on the law of the case by invoking a too restrictive standard for assessing whether that doctrine applies, truncating it from actually decided to expressly or specifically decided. And then so long as Mr. Robinson has persuaded this court that he has at least a reasonable possibility of prevailing on the issue, that it does need to go back to the Veterans Court for it to address in the first instance under the correct legal standard. And then similarly, with respect to whether the September 1979 VA document constitutes a quote-unquote decision, the context of the document is not in dispute. The text of the document is not in dispute. And he respectfully submits that under this court's case law, including Kirkpatrick versus Nicholson and Halpern versus Principi, that the question whether that document is or is not a quote-unquote decision is one of law. The Veterans Court erred by treating it as one of fact. And so once again, so long as Mr. Robinson has persuaded his court that he has at least a reasonable possibility of prevailing, that the proper remedy is to instruct the Veterans Court on the correct legal standard and send back that issue for the Veterans Court to decide under the correct legal standard in the first instance. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thanks to both counsel, and the case is submitted.